This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Civilians were targeted, with the elderly, people with disabilities, and very young children killed in horrific acts of violence.
That's UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani discussing a new report accusing South Sudan's government and its allies of brutal attacks on civilians. Details coming up. Also, Ethiopia and Eritrea are moving quickly to rebuild a relationship broken 20 years ago in a war over their border. And Cameroon has set October 7th as the date for its presidential election. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the UN Human Rights Office accuses the South Sudanese government and its allies of brutally and deliberately attacking civilians, particularly women and children, in what it says appears to be a scorched earth policy against opposition forces in parts of Unity State. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of a report in Geneva.
UN human rights monitors have documented acts of gross human rights violations and unspeakable brutality against civilians by government and associated forces, as well as by armed youth in multiple areas in South Sudan's southern Unity State. They say at least 232 civilians were killed and many more injured during the attacks, which took place in opposition-controlled areas between April 16th and May 24th. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says the deliberate and ruthless assaults may amount to war crimes.
Civilians were targeted, with the elderly, people with disabilities, and very young children killed in horrific acts of violence. Some hung from trees, and others burned alive in their own homes. The report also documents the use of sexual violence as a weapon of war, with at least 120 women and girls raped or gang-raped, including children as young as 4.
Shamdasani says survivors describe a brutal, ruthless campaign by attackers aimed at punishing and terrorizing them so they never return to their lands and homes. She says it suggests the government was pursuing a scorched-earth approach to rid itself of its perceived enemies. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zayd Raad Al Hussein is calling on the government to stop all attacks against civilians. He urges the government to launch investigations and to hold perpetrators of what he calls revolting acts against defenseless civilians accountable for their crimes. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The European Union is trying to find solutions to the problem of refugees and migrants pouring out of Africa and the Middle East to seek safety and better lives. One of the key proposals is to set up processing centers in North Africa to add some order to the chaos and ease the risks facing those fleeing their native countries. The UN Refugee Agency is pushing for a broader approach that eases the perilous crossing of the Mediterranean and shares the responsibilities as widely as possible. William Splendor, a senior spokesman for the UN High Commissioner for Refugees in Geneva, spoke with my colleague Paula Alexander about the challenges.
We are very concerned about the situation of thousands of people losing their lives while trying to cross the Mediterranean from North Africa every year, and the death toll is increasing. Last month, for instance, one in every 7 people who crossed the who tried to cross the Mediterranean died. This is outrageous. This is really shocking. That's why we are advocating for the search and rescue capacities in all countries in the Central Mediterranean region to be strengthened, because saving human lives has to be the priority. We need to have clear disembarkation mechanisms so that when ships rescue people who are in danger at sea, there is a possibility for them to be disembarked, because rescue at sea and disembarkation go hand in hand. So that's why we have put forward a number of proposals to the EU that will see clear pre-identified disembarkation centers, not just in North Africa, but all across the Mediterranean. And this is also very important. We are advocating for shared responsibility for collaborative practices between the EU and other countries in the Mediterranean area, but not for Europe simply to shift its responsibilities to other countries. So one of the problems is that few countries are being tasked with this responsibility. The case of Italy is particularly urgent, because they are the country that has been receiving in recent years the largest number of people, and we think that this is unfair. We need to have a system where this responsibility is shared.
How can you ease the growing anti-migrant sentiment that has developed in some European countries?
We are very sensitive to concerns about immigration and the integration of foreigners in Europe and elsewhere. But what we need to remember also is that the numbers of people arriving in Europe have gone down considerably. So in our view, you need to address the root causes of people's movements, whether they are economic or people are fleeing persecution and human rights violations. Otherwise, you are simply looking into the effects and not really into the causes. One of the reasons why people move is, of course, to improve their living conditions, and that's why the international community should support the development of countries of origin, look into creating more work opportunities in countries such as those in sub-Saharan Africa, and also to invest in governance, in the respect for human rights in these countries. And in the particular case of people who are fleeing conflict, we need to address these conflicts. There has never been so many conflicts around the world as there are today. In sub-Saharan Africa, but also in the Middle East. And this is the main trigger for the movement of populations who are looking for protection. And our capacity, the capacity of the international community to prevent and solve conflicts seems to be very diminished.
Apparently in Africa, you know, no countries have agreed to host any centers, and they seem concerned that doing so could turn them into magnets for even more refugees. How can we address those concerns?
Well, any approach that only involves one or two states or seeks to shift the responsibility is not really a solution, as we have seen. And we understand that many countries in North Africa have been approached, but so far they have not agreed to the proposals from the EU. And of course, without the cooperation of these countries, it would not be possible to have this situation. That's why it's important to look into cooperation arrangements, and not simply for Europe to shift its responsibilities to close its borders and let somebody else deal with the problem.
That was William Spindler, a senior UNHCR spokesman, speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander. In searching for solutions, the European Union has laid out a plan to spend 90 million euros. That's $100 million to reduce the flow of migrants from Africa across the Mediterranean. The money will pay for border security in North Africa and protection of migrants in Libya. But critics say it takes away from programs to reduce poverty in Africa and truly reduce the root causes of migration. Reporter Catherine Field in Paris covers the issue and speaks with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson.
What we had last month in the EU summit was a new focus on migration, and it was really this political pressure that has forced the European Union to give more funding to assist, if you like, the root causes of this migratory flow towards Europe. So what they have come up with is a whole new program which is really specifically aimed at North Africa, the Maghreb region. One of these projects is going to be in Morocco and Tunisia, which will really help support, if you like, national institutions such as the border forces, the agencies that patrol the coast. So they're putting in 55 million euros into that. When you also look at Libya, the EU has realized that they do need to help Libya to protect refugees and migrants who have made their way there, not just helping them in terms of their human rights, making sure they're looked after, but also to see if there's a way to help them get back home. There's voluntary humanitarian return. So they're putting in about 29 million into that. Also, we're looking again at Morocco. 6 million euros is going to help what's become known as vulnerable migrants. Now, these are really migrants who need absolutely everything. They need help to get back on their feet in terms of healthcare and need to give all sorts of assistance to try and get them back home or somewhere safe. So on the one hand, you've got them looking at actual programs on the ground, but on the other, you have to realize that these are all short-term measures and the priority is to dampen down the political rhetoric at home and secure Europe's borders.
Have aid groups and aid agencies such as UNHCR signed on to this idea?
On the one hand, you do have the International Organization for Migration signing on to this. The African Union and the European Union have all been working together, particularly on these voluntary humanitarian returns from North Africa. If you look at last year, in 3 months of last year, there were some 10,000 migrants who were returned, and they're hoping that there will be at least that many again this year. And they've been setting up camps, particularly 6 resettlement camps in Niger. On the other hand, you do have a lot of the African nations who are saying this actually isn't what the EU Trust Fund for Africa is meant to be about. It's meant to be about reducing and alleviating poverty. And they're saying that the EU has actually gone against what was meant to happen and is just looking at the specifics of these irregular migration flows and reducing the arrivals and also trying to strong-arm some African nations into some sort of compliance when it comes to returns. Their criticism is that this is actually overlooking all the local partners. They say it is ad hoc, and in particular, some of the aid agencies have said actually what is happening is this is diverting development aid, and you're diverting development aid from some of the least developed countries and aiding those countries that are specifically relevant to the migration agenda in the European Union.
That was Catherine Field in Paris speaking with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson. Ethiopia and Eritrea are moving quickly to rebuild a relationship broken 20 years ago in a war over their border. Today, Ethiopian Airlines said it would resume flights to the Eritrean capital Asmara on July 18th. As well as today, people could also make phone calls across the border for the first time since the war. The new communication links come just a day after the leaders of the two countries declared their state of war is over. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed visited Asmara on Sunday, where he was met with an enthusiastic welcome from Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki. The two countries have been estranged since their two-year war began in 1998. But last month, Abiy said his government would abide by a border set by the United Nations, creating a diplomatic opening. Abiy, who became prime minister earlier this year, has pushed through a number of reforms, including releasing thousands of political prisoners. Cameroon has set October 7th as the date for its presidential election. However, it remains an open question whether the vote can take place in the country's two English-speaking regions where separatists are fighting for an independent state. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Abdul Karimu is the deputy manager of Cameroon's election management body, ELECAM. He says ELECAM has yet to receive documents from any presidential candidate, but expects that to change. He says that according to Cameroon's electoral code, people who want to run for president still have up to July 19th to send their documents to the elections management body for examination. Already, a dozen people, including Joshua Osi of the main opposition Social Democratic Front, Akere Muna, a lawyer and former vice president of Transparency International, Maurice Kamto, head of the Movement for the Rebirth of Cameroon, and journalist Cabral Libi have declared their intentions to run. Incumbent President Paul Biya, who has been in office for more than 35 years, has not said whether he would run. But there have been calls from his party, traditional rulers, and even some opposition political parties for him to be their candidate. Traditional ruler and lawmaker Chafa Isaac says they are asking Biya to run in the hope that his re-election could bring peace to the embattled northwest and southwest regions and complete development projects he had initiated for the whole country.
We are calling on President Paul Biya to take all appropriate measures to create a conducive atmosphere, one, for peace to reign in Cameroon, two, for there to be a successful elections where he is a candidate.
But the Social Democratic Front's Joshua Osi says he does not think the elections can be conducted successfully in the northwest and southwest regions where the military is battling armed groups fighting for the creation of an English-speaking state. 20% of Cameroon's 23 million people are English speakers in a bilingual country where French is the predominant language. The conflict has killed more than 250 soldiers, armed fighters and civilians. It has also left over 160,000 people internally displaced and forced tens of thousands across the border in Nigeria.
Elections are not possible in the present circumstances in the northwest and the southwest.
Last week, lawmakers in the National Assembly passed a law extending their mandate for 12 months, saying the country cannot handle having presidential and parliamentary elections in the same year. Some lawmakers said they voted for the bill because the crisis in the English-speaking regions will make it impossible for the elections to take place. Last March, senatorial elections did not take place in the English-speaking Manyo and Lebelem administrative units, where some municipal councillors were arrested and locked up by armed groups. Armed separatists have vowed to block any elections in the English-speaking regions. The government says it will ensure the security and safety of voters. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission has reported that the ruling ZANU-PF improperly used school property, teachers and students in carrying out political activities. The Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe is asking the judicial system to ban the party from using schools and students ahead of the July 30th election. Reporter Kuzai Zanawash has more.
Obet Masaraure, the president of the Amalgamated Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, says it already has won a court case against ZANU-PF.
The Mashingwai Court, Justice Mafusire, clearly ordered that school children should not be frog merged into political rallies. School teachers should not also be forced to contribute into private political processes.
Adding to the judgment, the judge ruled that school property such as furniture and buses should not be used for political purposes and banned holding political events on school grounds. Rights groups and the United Nations welcomed the ruling, but ZANU-PF quickly appealed. Lawyer Doug Coulthard represents the teachers' union.
The effect of the appeal is that it suspends the operation of the High Court order. And ever since filing the appeal, ZANU-PF have every single day since filing the appeal have continued with these violations.
He says the violations began immediately after the appeal was filed on July 4th.
On the 5th of July, ZANU-PF officials went to a school in Mazoe and demanded that they be given space for a political rally at the school. That rally went ahead on the school premises. On the 6th of July, there was a series of violations. One in Gokwe, where ZANU-PF had a political rally that was addressed by the president. This rally was held at a primary school.
Coulthard adds that the school was closed for the day and school buses were used to carry people from around the province to attend the rally. Coulthard says it could be a while before the case is heard at the Supreme Court, but the teachers' union Tuesday applied to the court to have the original ruling remain in effect until the appeal is heard.
We will be filing an urgent application, which is called Leave to Execute Pending Appeal. And if we win, essentially what it will mean is that the High Court order will stand, notwithstanding the appeal. So as we wait for the appeal to happen, the High Court order will still be in force.
Zimbabweans go to the polls on the 30th of July. It is a significant election in the country's history, since its ruler of 37 years, Robert Mugabe, and his longtime opponent, the late Morgan Tsvangirai, will not be on the ballot paper. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
No African countries made it past the group stage at the World Cup, but that doesn't mean the continent doesn't have anyone to cheer for. Players who are born in Africa or are the sons of African immigrants are peppered across the roster of the remaining teams. And that's most evident in France's squad, which faces Belgium in the first semi-final match later today. Cameroon, Congo, Mali, Angola, Mauritania, Senegal and Algeria are represented in that team. Kylian Mbappe has scored 3 goals for France so far, and N'Golo Kanté has played a key role with his speed, stamina, and non-stop motor. The other semi-final pits England against surprise Croatia tomorrow. For more details on World Cup action, be sure to stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Jonas Cummings, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss vitiligo, a condition that causes people to lose pigment in their skin. Our guest is Dr. Aisha Sethi, Associate Professor and Director of Yale Dermatology Global Health Program. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, The 31st African Union Summit has wrapped up in Mauritania with advisory decisions on Libya, Somalia and South Sudan. The significance of the African Union with Deputy Chairperson Kwesi Kwoti on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.